welcome to our special series, The Town Hall, the program in which we bring the biggest newsmakers face to face with a live audience, an opinionated audience. My guest today is a man of many parts. He's a director, a producer, a television show host, now a columnist. He's irreverent, but in my view, not irreverent enough. But I don't blame him, because his irreverence often lands him in one controversy after the other. Please welcome on the Town Hall today, my guest today, Karan Johar. Are you the sort of person where somebody's kind of chaining you and holding you back? One gets the sense that there's a real Karan Johar waiting to leap out but can't, that we don't actually get to see the guy who sits inside you.
That's true, and it's been happening in phases. I mean, there's a bit of me, then there's more of me, and then there's more of me, and eventually there'll be all of me. So right now it's all in stages. I'm work in progress.
Why are you held back? And it's true for a lot of people in your industry, but you're not typical. And why is there this sense that there is a person inside whom we don't always get to see or know?
Because I don't know what the ramifications of that would be. If I really came out and spoke my heart or spoke about myself in complete honesty and candor, I'm not so sure that those ramifications are those that I can endure and perhaps deal with. And I'm telling you very honestly, I'm always weighing my words. I mean, when it's about myself and about my cinema and the work I do, my relationships, I can be candid because I've been honest, I would like to say at least 8 out of 10 times. But there are many occasions where we lie, where we have to lie.
Because we all lie at some point.
I need to. It's because I don't think we're in an environment where complete honesty will go down well.
What are you scared of?
Repercussions all the time. I run a company. I'm accountable to so many people. I make movies. I deal with so many millions of people whose livelihood depends on those things I say. And I make movies that like really are, and we, as I know, as an industry, I believe, we're completely soft targets. We've always been. It's just the way it is. Anything that happens in the world and you attack good old Indian cinema, where actually it's the one place in the world that gives you all the comfort.
Well, let's start a little bit about your journey up to this point. Did you always know that you would have something to do with cinema? If you hadn't been Karan Johar making these movies, who or what would you have been?
I always knew I would be famous.
At what age did you have this vain moment of self-love?
I swear I'm not lying to you. I used to be really good from the 8th standard onwards. At elocution. Because I couldn't do sport. I was 150 kilos. I was the most introverted child. If you asked me to talk to anyone at a party or be there, it wasn't me. It was like I was always under my mother's pallu, literally and otherwise. But it was on that stage when I was in front of a mic and I spoke to an audience or I did debates, drama, I was always confident. And the 10th standard, it was my last, and I remember they announced it. They said, oh, now, because it was always a given that I would get the gold medal. It was just the thing. I was like the Shah Rukh Khan of my school in those departments. And it was the 10th standard, the teacher who introduced me, and she said, and the last elocution now by Karan, and I got this applause, and like it was my last rendition or whatever I was going to do before I was going to win the gold and never, of course, perform again on that school stage. And I looked at that stage and I finished saying what I did. I made my speech, my elocution. I won, of course. And at that day, and I looked at myself and I said, I'm going to be famous. It's not possible that I'm not going to be famous. That's what I want to do. So I realized, whatever I do, I want to be famous.
Why?
I don't know.
What does being famous get you?
I don't know. I just wanted that kind of attention.
Did you want money or did you want fame?
No, I wanted fame. Money has never been a prerequisite. I love the idea that I get recognized where I go. I feed off it.
You don't feel oppressed and claustrophobic. No, you don't long for a few moments of anonymity.
I wonder when I walk into places and no one's looking at me, then I feel something's wrong. Then I make sure I make eye contact with an Indian so that he recognizes me, and that starts a train of like, you know, like around me so that I get recognized. I'm so excited on red carpets.
So you're like a peacock who likes strutting his stuff.
Love it. Strutting my stuff, there's not much, there's a lot of stuff, but it's not really, it's not strut worthy. Let's just
Well, I've been
like
looking
that.
At your shoes. Is this Karan Johar sobered down?
Do you think these are too much?
By my standards of a Jholawala journalist,
what is your Jholawala journalist, okay. No, let's not stereotype anything. But I just want to say that these are my most sober shoes in my closet right now. I want to tell you, and I thought about it, I said, I'm doing this slightly intellectual, clever, I have to say the right thing interview. I'm not on Jhalak Dikhla Ja dancing. So I said, I should wear my most sober shoes. And that's what I came up with.
I'll tell you why I'm focusing on your shoes, which I typically don't tend to notice what people are wearing at all. But to me, it kind of fits in with what you're saying about wanting to be on a stage. Is that a way that allows otherwise introverted to actually come out of their shells?
Yes, because when I swing on my personality, it's always for an audience. Because actually, if you leave me to my own device, on my own, I can be a big loner. I'm Gemini, so you get two for the price of one. One of me is lonely, sometimes almost depressed, sometimes too lonely, sometimes clinging on to memories and nothing else. The other part of me wants to face the camera, be out there on stage, even dance on a stage. Where I'm a filmmaker at 44, I should not be doing any such thing. Then there's the other side of me that, as I said, can actually pop a sleeping pill sometimes to get that sleep so that you can like shut your mental doors, because there is so much to be worried about and scared about, and I fear loneliness all the time.
How lonely is it to be in this industry? Is it symptomatic of the industry, or is it symptomatic of Karan, who hasn't resolved all his issues internally?
But I've resolved all my issues internally.
You have?
I have.
So why do you say you're sleepless at times?
Because you feel lonely. I think the industry per se should not be generalized for the reason of your loneliness. But you really wonder about how many of your relationships matter and how many don't. Sometimes the lines are very blurred in our industry, Barkha. We're insular people. We live in this bubble all the time because we talk film, we sleep film, we eat film, we just...
And
then you build relationships, you build emotions, and then you don't know if those emotions are really those that just are up for the film, or then would you take those even when you don't work together? So you land up wondering about every equation you make in the movie industry. And then at 44, when you're lonely or not in a relationship, you wonder, I don't want to grow alone, I don't have kids. You wonder that, you know, what your life is going to be and all the success you might get and all the love and attention you get, where does that go? Because you have to take it somewhere. When you don't have that love to share with somebody, it gets you worried. And it's a recent kind of an anxiety that I have... I've discovered about myself, and I've read people talking openly about their depression, and there was a phase in my life where I was really depressed, and I went through that phase, and I thought it was something to do with me getting a cardiac arrest at one point of time, and I went to my GP.
Were they panic attacks?
It was, and he said, you're going through an anxiety attack.
No, the symptoms are very similar, because I know the first time I had a panic attack, I actually thought I was having a heart attack.
Exactly. So I remember rushing, and I didn't tell anyone. I just felt it. I was in the middle of a meeting 2.5 years ago. I left. I just said, sorry, I have to leave. There's something urgent come up. And I went straight driving, because I'd heard that Saif Ali Khan had felt something similar once, and went to, ironically, the same GP, Dr. Agarwal. He's the popular GP of most people in the movies. I went to him, and he says, it's an anxiety attack. And I met a psychologist post that. And then I realized that I had to deal with some internal issues that had not built up and reached to this point. That was resulting in this anxiety.
Deepika Padukone on my program first came out about actually being recognized and diagnosed with clinical depression. And then she said it's really important to speak about it publicly. Are you saying you went through something similar?
Well, she told me, the psychologist, she said, you're going through depression. And as a result of that depression, there's anxiety. There's no particular reason for it, because it wasn't...
It can be chemical.
It was... And then I went through a series of medication for it.
When antidepression medication?
It was anti-anxiety at that time. A year and a half post that, when I stopped that, I realized that, you know, I was in a much better place. Like today, I actually feel the emotion of excitement and happiness. There was an entire zone, and I don't want to sound like this poor little rich kid, like a kid, well, not at all, but like, you know, but it was genuinely, only you know when you're going through it, what you feel. Like you stop feeling the zing, you stop feeling excitement, you stop feeling happiness, you know, and now I feel like those beats are coming back in my life.
And how would it manifest itself apart from panic attacks?
Lack of sleep, always on the edge, basically just directionless, and you feel always like you need to take a beat to breathe, like, you know, you feel like it's reaching, like, you know, and you feel lost. Like I was leaving even social events and parties much earlier than I would have. I wasn't there, like, and I used to wonder what I was going through till I started. Those sessions made a big difference to me, because I felt that in those sessions we touched on many things of my life, many things that actually I had parked. You know, catharsis, you know, also even the fact that I had not dealt entirely with the loss of my father, though it's been 11 or 12 years. I felt the pain and hurt of certain relationships that had dwindled from my life. And I was carrying all that baggage and the fear of the future. The fear that I wasn't being able to find a life partner. Though I was being able to vicariously live through my cinema, I wasn't actually being able to feel that presence of love and laughter in my life. At one point, it was really bothering me. Today, I feel a lot more free of it. I feel the abandon. I feel like the so what. It's not there. There are many other things to look forward to.
It's brave of you to share it. And I say that because there's a certain degree of condescending lack of understanding when people talk about anxiety attacks, when people talk about depression. People don't understand that it is an ailment. They think if you're rich and famous and have this cushy existence that Karan Johar does, how dare he be depressed?
He has no right to be.
I agree with that.
You know, and I really believe that I think in the days of urban angst, which is what I think we feel constantly in the zone that we live in, we're surrounded with so much noise. That used to not be our life. two decades ago. This noise of social media, this noise of over communication, this noise around us all the time. And I think it's because of all that noise, you crave that silence. And I think that when you don't have that silence, there are other kind of, you know, it manifests into other things. Like now when I look back, I feel I've seen older people go through it and we've never been able to diagnose it. Like I felt there was a phase in my father's life where I felt that he probably could have going through depression and we kept feeling that he's become introverted all of a sudden. And I felt that had me and my mother really taken it up more seriously, because we would have understood it probably better then. We didn't. Today when I look back and I feel like there are so many people that we just think dwindle into silence and into their zone and we think, you know, abhi thode, you know, buzurg ho gaye hain to unko chhod do, you know, but actually they're going through a lot. It's a disease. It can happen to you while, you know, you're doing absolutely nothing with your life. You can be in a marriage, all sorted with your kids, everything, and you could find yourself depressed. Like Deepika Padukone was very brave to speak about it. She's gorgeous. She's stunning. She's successful. Why is she depressed? What do you mean? Like, I have a friend, like, who's a very pragmatic friend, Manish Malhotra, and he was like, don't talk nonsense. Like, he's like, why are you depressed? He's one of those people who doesn't understand this. But when I went through it, it was the most dark period of my life. I can't explain to you the pain and anxiety and anguish. And
what did you feel? Like, describe what you felt.
Helpless, unhappy, sad, wanting to get onto a flight and always leaving the city and walking the streets of other cities with nothing to say to anyone, not getting out of my bed from my hotel room sometimes, and I wasn't being able to share this with anyone. I was making up meetings and reasons for me to leave the city. I found comfort in sleeping on a long-haul flight, waking up in a city where I didn't have to meet people, and being in my hotel room till 3 and 4 till I really got out to have lunch or just walk the streets with my thoughts. It was a very dark, deep and a helpless time. I mean, there was nothing I could do about it. But it passed because I was medicated, Barkha. I went through psychology, and there's a difference between going to a therapist and a psychologist. I needed medication.
It wasn't just counseling. You actually needed psychiatric intervention.
I did need it. And when we spoke, and you know, sometimes the psychologist is a blend of therapy and psychology. And
it's always both.
This lady kind of brought the two schools of thought together and realized that she had to put me onto immediate medication. So first it was like much stronger, and then we weaned it off. And it's just 3 months ago that I actually stopped it all. And I feel like I'm in touch with her. She's a friend. And when my trailer came out and she chatted, she says, your film looks happy and I'm happy.
Well, thank you for sharing it. You know, Shah Rukh Khan in an interview once told me that he had no friends and he only considered his children to be his friends. And it was such a striking thing for me to hear. I think it brought home the loneliness of urban life. Do you believe you have friends?
Yes, I do. I understand why Shah Rukh says that, and he's not even my friend. He's like an older sibling. You know, we don't have a friendship. Like Shah Rukh and me, like, can't backslap each other. Like, I wouldn't. I have too much respect for him.
Do you still remain friends?
Yes.
Despite all the whispers of a rupture in that relationship?
No. There have been ups and downs like most relationships go through, but we are solid. In fact, I'm taking a flight tonight to meet him in Lisbon. His wife is my friend. His kids are now my friends, ironically. But he and I have a sibling connect. But I have friends. I'm very fortunate to have friends. Friends from away from the movies, from in the movies. But I'm sometimes much more available to them than I want them to be for me. For some strange reason, I feel like I can resolve a lot of my issues within myself. And I never
need... You tend to be a loner about it.
I'm not somebody who can pick up the phone and say, give me emotional advice. It's like when I went through what I spoke to you about, nobody knew about it. I didn't tell anyone.
You didn't share your depression with a single other person?
No, not even one. I couldn't, because I didn't feel anyone would understand.
Go back to being a child in class 8 when you decide you're going to be famous. Were you a happy child?
I was never really happy. I don't know how to explain. I didn't go through the beats like normal kids did. I was
Why not?
I was exceptionally effeminate as a child, Barkha. I was always like, you know, I was like, oh, I used to feel like my hands and feet were just not like the other boys were. For some reason, it just never happened. And I was obsessed by Hindi film. I grew up in a neighborhood that didn't understand my love for Hindi cinema as much as I did. My parents actually didn't understand it as much as I was. I felt I was a bit of a strange child always. Like ever since I was a little child, like there were nothing. Boys played cricket, I didn't. You know, I hung out with some of the girls in the building or in the neighborhood. And then I tried boarding school, which didn't work out, came back home. It was only when I went on that stage and I performed and I discovered I could do this, that then when I went into college, I took that personality with me. And I discovered that I was a curious personality. I did all kinds of courses and I met all kinds of people. And I discovered that I could have an alter personality. I could fake it.
But this boy who's effeminate, who doesn't do the boy things, does he get mocked at school? Does he get bullied?
No, all those things didn't happen. It was just me and my own problems with
myself.
But
how did other kids react? Would they make fun of you?
Well, sometimes you heard the word, like, which doesn't happen anymore. Today you hear all kinds of, today suddenly you're called, if you're effeminate, you're called gay. If at all, it's derogatory. Those days, there was a word called pansy. It's a very 80s term for being effeminate.
Yeah.
And you heard that, and that used to get my, I remember my ears used to turn red with anger. And contrary to what I come across today, but I was a fighter. And when I heard that word, my instinct was to hit. It was not fat, because fat I was. Fat is something that in this country, I've just grown to realize, makes people laugh. For some idiotic reason, they think fat people should be laughed at. It's ridiculous. That was not my issue. When I used to hear the word pansy, it used to get me really angry. It's like there was an internal army that used to come up with its missiles and want to explode.
When you look back at it, why do you think it made you angry?
Because it made me feel like I did not belong. It made me feel abnormal. It made me feel different from the others. And I knew I was. But it just made me feel very angry that why am I not conforming to what is considered normal?
Do you conform today?
I don't care today. Of course I don't conform. And today I am who I am. And I remember that, you know, like I had to sit with my hands and I say, control them. Like, you know, they shouldn't flop. I used to sit with my legs and say, walk in a certain way. Like it was something, and not that today I would advise that to anyone, because it's so ridiculous and regressive. You are and you should be who you are, and never ever care about what people think. Own it. But I'm telling you, I did not feel that in those days when I was young.
You were not meeting the macho image that was expected of you?
It was not just expected. I wasn't meeting the regular boy image that was expected of me.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I wasn't expected. I mean, for crying out loud, I used to dance in my room to Hindi film songs, and was invariably to what the heroine sang. I didn't feel it was abnormal. I grew to realize it was.
Well, it's not abnormal.
Well, today I've taken that whole training ground of my bedroom.
Conventionally, it would have been considered abnormal, is what you
I mean, it was like I used to react to different kind of music, react to different kinds of things. I was a different kid.
Okay, I'm going to open this up. We have Anushree. Let's get her the mic.
Production houses nowadays are experimenting with subjects that are quite sensitive to the Indian audiences. Would you like to experiment with such subjects which are controversial, or would you like to stick to the Hindi family wedding kind of elements that are common to your movies?
You know, it's really strange.
You have changed, right?
I combat
You've
this.
Gone from a Kabhi Khushi Kabhi Gham to a Kapoor and Sons.
Exactly. And I feel, but I always feel like that my reputation, unfortunately, in the wrongest way precedes me. Because I'm considered like the family who makes these regular. Actually, I've tried to shake it up a lot within, you know, even when I've directed a short film for Bombay Talkies or produced a film like Kapoor and Sons, we've tried in our own endeavor to kind of, if I refeel a screenplay is riveting and yet it's saying something solid, I don't mind. But I'm not a studio. I don't have the money to take risks.
Let me come in there, because, you know, while there is the whole trickly sort of perfect family movies that you've done, you've also sort of put infidelity in the public domain.
But nobody remembers that. They just remember Kabhi Khushi Kabhi Gham and those big large scale shots. And like, I'm like, dude, I made Kabhi Alvida Na Kehna from leaving your parents to leaving your wife. Isn't that some kind of a journey? But nobody gives me any kind of credit for that. So from Kabhi Khushi Kabhi Gham to Kapoor and Sons, totally different syntax of the functional to dysfunctional family. But unfortunately, I'm like, no, I don't want to make social messaging movies that don't make money. I'm quite clear about that. When I sanction or green light a film, I have to see the viability, because I'm not a funded studio. I'm not a public listed
company. But, you
know,
one of the things you have been criticized of is that there are no middle class people ever in your movies, right? And you wrote also, I think, on NETV.com, so I do like rich and beautiful people, so what?
Yeah.
But I thought you were being partly like sardonic about yourself.
No, the thing is, when people say, I mean, I don't want to sound, I'm not elitist. We were a middle class family till we saw money thanks to Kuch Kuch Hota Hai. I mean, I understand middle class morality, even though nobody's going to believe me with my shiny shoes, but I do understand that. I grew up with a struggling father with an economic situation. I totally understand it. I made a film.
Do you remember moments without money?
Yes. Yes. And I remember not going abroad because I overheard a chat with my parents who said that we don't have the money to send him to university because I wanted to go to England. Of course, one has seen it, of course, not to the extent that many, many others have in different circumstances. But I understand it, of course. But for me, big cinema was always largeness and always like the whole celluloid for me was dream. Today, when I get an exciting script with a new novel genre saying something that is relevant, of course, I want to make that film. Of course, I do. But I do check why. Like, I'm not taking chances. Like, everybody was shocked when I wanted to present Lunchbox, because it was what you call completely middle class. I loved it because it moved me. I moved it. I cried in the end of the film. I said, I want to present this film. And I put my money where my mouth was. And so I did it. But that is a one-off situation. Not that I plan to do it every other day.
All right, Sakshi.
My question is that Bollywood has always been a very, very powerful agent of social change. However, we haven't seen several movies that have dealt with the, I would say, sensitive subject of homosexuality with the degree of sensitivity that it probably deserves. 2 decades ago, we had Deepa Mehta's Fire, which was considered to be extremely appalling to a large section of the audience, until this year when we had Kapoor and Sons, which was so well received. Do you think that the ordinary Indian man has actually matured and has become more accepting of diverging sexual preferences?
When you mean ordinary Indian man, you mean there are so many demographics in this country, but a country within a country within
a
country.
But you have gone from it being a caricature, slightly comic persona in the Dostana, to a very different, authentic persona in Kapoor and Sons.
So I would say that, but even in Kapoor and Sons, there was such focus on handling it with subtlety. We kept using the word dignity, but actually it was subtlety.
Why?
You know, because there was a fear of homophobia. We've kept feeling like the studio and us and all of us collectively felt that, you know, like, you know, tone it down. Now, had this been in a different environment, we would not be toning it down. We would probably be kind of addressing it in a little more expressive manner. Having said that, I still was very amazed with the way the film was received, even with that certain audience. It went on to do a happy number at the box office. And I was quite amazed that this didn't prop up as a problem the way we had envisaged.
But if you look at your own journey as a filmmaker, dealing with the subject of a gay man on screen, from Dostana to Kapoor and Sons,
you know,
what has changed for you? Why did you start off with it being this slightly comic, caricatured thing, which you say at least helped to put it out there in the
exactly.
public domain?
And I believe that. I believe that Kal Ho Na Ho is where it began.
Yeah.
With the Kanta Ben
yes.
track to Dostana.
But you remember that was criticized a lot.
And I agree with
as actually being homophobic and actually, you know, mocking gay
people.
It was
never. It was.
I know it
people,
was not intended as
it
that.
Was, no. And I want to say that to those people who criticized me, that I made it a conversational point in this country through mainstream cinema. Till that point, it was never talked about as a theory. People didn't even know about it. They don't know, but there are many, many people in this country that do not know the existence and what the concept of homosexuality is. Even if they felt that sensation from within, they don't know how
They're
to word
denial.
It. They are in complete denial. So when we addressed it in Kal Ho Na Ho, Dostana, yes, it was caricaturish, and I own up to that. It was stereotypical of what a gay man is. But at least it became, and there, people forget there's a scene in the movie where a traditional Punjabi mother accepts it. And seriously, it's an acceptance. And Priyanka Chopra has a scene with Kiran Kher and she says she accepts it the next day, blesses them and leaves. Not in a funny manner, that was a serious scene. No one sees that scene. They just see the other parts of it. Because where we showed a mother accepting it, then from there on, I did a short called Bombay Talkies, which talks about men in denial of their sexuality and how sometimes you could lie, get married, but actually be a gay man and how you could actually cause so much pain and hurt around you. And then, of course, finally in Kapoor and Sons, where we dabbled with it. And I think there it's taking baby steps, Barkha. I mean, sexuality is a sensitive topic in general. And in a country such as ours, which is sensitive to almost everything, we have to be very careful.
I want to understand a little more why we're taking baby steps when we now know so many people who are out in the open with their sexuality. But let's take the next question, Preeti.
I wanted to ask you, you know, when the bill, you know, the 377 was taken back.
When it was criminalized again
by
the court.
Yeah, it took close to 2 years for these guys to, you know, build it up and, you know, fight for it and all. And it was just taken back and everybody was disappointed that time. So you being, you know, Karan Johar, why didn't you support it that time and, you know, do something about it?
Well, what could I have done alone? I mean, we all wrote about it on various platforms. I still say that that bill is, it's absolutely ridiculous. And I feel like it completely works against the core of our country. We are a democratic nation. And I feel like that there is that your sexuality, your preference is yours alone and you cannot be criminalized for it. That's just ridiculous.
It's shameful to have homosexuality criminalized.
And I just think that it's your preference. And I think that you must, but what can I fight and do alone? Because I mean,
if you stand, 100 others will stand from the
no,
industry.
No, we stood, darling. 100 others don't stand with you. You sometimes just stand alone. We're not entirely I have to say on behalf of my industry and fraternity that very rarely do we sometimes come together. You know, sometimes you feel very lonely in your own crisis. We used to be a fraternity, now we're an industry. We need to be a fraternity again, a community of people who come together to fight a cause such as this, because on a humanitarian level, I believe it should be abolished.
You made a joke, and I think it was only a part joke, that if I take a position on 377, there will be 377 cases against me because it's criminalized, right? But you've also written about how online you are mocked by trolls who'll say you're a gay so-and-so, yeah. Right? MCBC Gali is there.
That seems to be like the response to anything you tweet suddenly. I could be saying the most emotional thing and I'll get gay. That'll be a tweet back, gay. Or you'll get something that'll say chakka, which means eunuch. I mean, it's so banal that now it's amusing. Like that, you put on any tweet, you just get one word. You know, that'll be like this. And there are so many people that, especially on social media, you'll be shocked and appalled at the number of people. And I purposely go into their profiles to check who are these people, you know, who can say these things. And they're these very confident, like preening like peacocks kind of men. They may look like you want to kill them because, you know, they look like they should be behind bars in any case. They have that cocky expression on their face, very happy that they can stand behind the garb of a Twitter handle, yeah, and actually massacre you with their word. And it's just one word. It's not even, they don't even have many things to say. They just say chakka. What does that mean? And here I'm talking about a very serious thing. I'm talking about maybe somebody who's dead, and I'm saying, you know, my wishes, my thoughts and prayers, etc. Chakka, what does that mean?
It's idiotic.
Gay. I mean, you know, and go do this and go do that and shove this there and shove that there. And I'm like, you know, dude, like you've got to deal with this kind of crap. And now eventually I'm laughing about it only because it's so amusing. It's so stupid.
How did you feel initially when...
Oh, targeted. Like I was like in my own domain. I felt like I was completely being attacked individually. Then I realized that actually they're just downloading their own unhappiness. Mm. And that's why I wrote about it, yeah, on the column. And I wrote that, you know, I feel like I pout in my selfie. That's my problem, yaar. If I feel like I want to pout like Finding Nemo and take a selfie of mine own, maybe I like my face from a top angle with a pout, that's my problem. How does it make me a chakka? And chakka is not even a technically correct term for what they're trying to say.
Do you feel this pressure on you because you're a public person that you are expected to come out and define your sexuality? You are repeatedly asked about it. There's a perception that you tiptoe around it, that you want to say something but you won't. I'm always in a dilemma about whether to ask this or not, because at one level I feel it's anyone's sexual preferences are their business, yours and mine.
Yeah.
At another level, I just feel that this has become a kind of stand up and be counted moment, right? So you have had somebody like Vikram Seth, who came out as, I still remember he said to me on my show, I'm gay, or I'm at least partially gay, because he's bisexual. But he felt the need to make a statement because it's become something more than just your personal preference. It's become deeply political. And I don't mean that in the party political sense. So I'm just wondering, do you tiptoe around this because you're not comfortable talking about it, or do you tiptoe around it because it's nobody's business?
It is A, nobody's business, but I do agree with what you're saying. I do agree that sometimes talking about yourself when you're a public figure is the order of the day, and what you say can change things, and you must say it. I wish to be silent on my sexuality for a number of reasons that I don't want to talk about. But I don't want to talk about my preference, whether I'm asexual, bisexual, homosexual, or trisexual, or whatever sexual. It doesn't matter, because I would be like that in any circumstance with sexuality when it comes to. I don't feel the need to come out, pun intended or not, to say anything.
Is it because it's personal, or is it because in this environment you're scared?
Now, words are a very clever way of putting yourself into trouble.
I am clever.
Yes, I know you're very clever. So I'm going to be even more clever and not answer that question.
No, look, I don't want to push you on this, I want to understand.
Push me all
because,
you want.
And I'll tell you why I want to understand. Because it's almost like you want to say something, but you don't. People may say to you every day, gay, whatever, but you yourself in your writings are constantly alluding sexuality and then not going that extra.
All I want to say is that I'm on the edge, I don't want to fall.
You're on the edge of coming out?
I'm on the edge. I don't want to fall. That's all
I'm
saying.
Why are you scared of falling? That's the more important thing to understand.
I'm not scared, Barkha. I just feel with every stage of your life, you do something extraordinary. Hmm. This is not that stage of my life. This is a stage where I'm building myself. And as an entity in the world of mainstream movies and entertainment, I still believe I have to get where I need to get. When I get where I need to get, and I feel that even emotionally, I will speak about my life. And when I feel the need to, I will be the first person to, because I don't like to lie about the big things in my life. I lie about the daily things about my life, because I'm like any other person, manipulating situations and scheming my way through life. But about the big moments in my life, I would never lie. If I felt I could alter people's lives in a good way, I would not lie. So understand that there is a certain kind of fear and apprehension that I live with on a daily basis. Maybe that's also to do with a part of what we discussed in the beginning on the head of our interview,
sure,
to do with my own internal anxiety.
Sure.
When I'm ready and when I choose to, you will hear me out, shout and loud.
I think that's absolutely fair, and it is absolutely your right to determine when that moment does come for you. Let's take another question. Saloni?
So my question to you is, in light of the recent events of limitless censorship, where certain scenes are, you know, pertinent to mirror the content or essence of the story, so how do you think the storyline of such movies is affected by censorship? For example, in the Wake Up Sid controversy, you had to personally go and apologize to Mr. Thackeray. So why are filmmakers answerable to such political parties?
Always. So let's just rewind for our viewers. In Wake Up Sid, you say, or a character says, Bombay instead of Mumbai. I remember being here doing shows at that time. You eventually go and negotiate peace with Raj Thackeray by putting a disclaimer ahead of the movie. Why the hell should you have to do that?
Let me say, because your journey is not yours alone, firstly. There were hundreds of people whose lives and careers depended on that release Friday. So when it was very easy for people to point fingers and say, why did you need to go and apologize? But sometimes when you have a release that is not all about yourself, it's not just you and your stand you take. So if something you do can dilute the impact of what is happening politically, you do what it takes.
That could be called surrendering to the mob.
Well, I know what you mean, and I perhaps at that point of time had to do what was best for this given situation. The ramifications of that later you can only reflect on when it's already happened. But at that point of time, there was no other solution. I had to do what was best for those people who I was making the film for as well. It was not just my film. There were lead actors, there were studios, there was money invested. It was not mine alone. So it was a calculated call that I had to take at that point of time. Whether or not I believed in that or not is a separate topic of discussion. But I do believe, and I've been saying this out loud, that it is not censorship. It should be certification. That's all I keep saying. Certify us, don't censor us. That's our request as an industry.
There are two different debates here, Karan. Censorship and political parties being able to dictate what happens in the industry. You have parties, again, Raj Thackeray's party, you have the Shiv Sena also supporting this position. There is talk at this moment of a cultural boycott of Pakistani artists and Pakistani actors. Your movie, Ae Dil Hai Mushkil, has been threatened to the extent that you have politicians saying, we will not allow this movie to be released because it has Fuad Khan, a Pakistani artist, in a role in this movie. Shah Rukh Khan's movie has also been targeted. How do you see this demand of a cultural boycott? I personally think it's, and I've said this on Twitter, it's ridiculous, because I think that instead of targeting the institutions that actually foment terror, you're targeting soft targets, people who don't have anything to do with it. But you are now being asked to get to edit out the Pakistani bits in your movie, the Pakistani actors in your movie. How are you going to deal with this?
Firstly, I have to say that, you know, I understand the anger and the anguish that surrounds us. I empathize, and I feel my heart bleeds for the lost lives. There's nothing that can ever explain or justify this terrible feeling of terror. I mean, that surrounds our country, our world at this moment. It is saddening, it's heartbreaking, and you feel a huge... I'm a son of somebody who fought for... like, my father was part of the freedom struggle of this country. I've grown up on stories of patriotism and valor, and this is my country, and I love it, and I feel immensely patriotic at every given point of time. And I feel terrible with every lost life. It burns me, it kills me, and when I read that news, it angers you as well. You wonder why any of this is happening, because terrorism is not an answer to anything. Then you're faced in a situation such as this. And Barkha, I have to say that if this was truly a solution, then one would take it. But this is not a solution. There are larger forces. What is the solution to stop this, to stop this level of terror?
So you're saying asking a Fuad Khan to pack up and go home is not going to solve terror?
I don't think that's a solution. I really don't believe it's a solution. I believe there are larger forces that have to kind of come together to sort situations out. And this cannot be banning talent or art or the arts. It's not, according to me, a solution. But I feel vulnerable, scared while even saying this. I feel, and I understand as I say this, I understand the anger of our times, I understand the anguish of our times, I understand, and I completely feel the pain and anger. I do, as an Indian citizen, I completely do. But I have to also say that if that was a solution, then that would have been so easy. Wouldn't the world be a happier place if it was so easy to make these kinds of solutions? And I feel like in the industry is always a soft target. I believe the movies and what we do, we are here to spread love and happiness. And we are always, somehow I feel like, very vulnerable and sometimes very afraid of the ramifications of what I say or do.
You're feeling scared saying this.
I am. At this moment, I'm scared. I'm scared because, as I said, when you said or you are bringing up this situation, I feel very vulnerable as a filmmaker. I always feel we're targeted, and I hope people will understand that we take decisions that are artistic. We take decisions that are creative. We never look at things in anything else, in our dynamics, in any other way at all. And I feel today, if my film is going to be targeted because of this, it will make me exceptionally sad, because my intent was always to put out a creative product of love and nothing else.
How are you going to deal with this threat from these political parties?
Well, I have no idea, and I beseech everyone to look at it very holistically and understand the situation, that there is a larger situation here. It is not about it that has anything to do with banning talent. Let's look at it in a larger perspective and find that answer. And I am not somebody who can find that answer. Who am I? I'm nobody in the scheme of things. I'm a filmmaker telling a love story. How do I get dragged?
But you know, you hear these sort of television programs that say all of these Pakistani artists who are working in India, first they must take a position on terrorism in India, and only then should they be allowed to function here, and so on. I mean,
everyone who has a personal feeling of that comes, be it Indian or from any other country, if they feel very strongly about something, they must express it. But that has to come organically from them. We can't put words in anyone's mouth. Today, I feel I'm a vulnerable soft target. That's all I have to say to you right now. I felt it. I faced the repercussions of it in the past. And I've constantly combated that on various films. And it's always been like sometimes you want to with folded hands say that we're a creative industry, please leave us alone. We make movies, we spread love. There are millions of people in this world and this country, forget the world, with this country, we make happy with the work we do. Allow us that. We're not part, like my father used to tell me, he left his home when he was 18 years old to come to the movie industry. And he said it was what he called his sukoon ghar, his place of happiness, where everyone coexisted, where everyone was like the most like secular part of this entire country was within the film industry. And he says, why do I feel like that dream is slipping away? Mm. And he says, why do I feel like we are, and before he died 12 years ago, and things have only gotten worse. And he's like, wo maza nahi aa raha, wo dil nahi hai, wo jo hua karta tha. And I want to go back that we're the one industry that can impact ways of thinking, that can impact ways of feeling. And I feel that we should just not be those soft targets anymore. We leave us alone. We don't matter in the scheme of things, but we can make things better and happier.
And you don't agree with the call for a cultural boycott of Pakistani artists?
Agreeing or disagreeing is not the stand I'd like to take. I don't think, is that the solution? I ask anybody, I ask you that.
I don't think it is. But let's put it to the audience. Let's first have a show of hands. Do you believe it's misplacing anger to actually target Pakistani artists and actors for terrorism that is fomented by the deep state of Pakistan? Should actors and artists be left alone? Raise your hand if you agree. Let's have a show of hands if you believe that the artistic community should be left alone. And that is really heartening here to see. I think we got that show of hands. Is there somebody who thinks differently? Is there somebody who thinks it's fair to demand a boycott? Anybody who won't watch the next film because Fuad Khan is in it? Right. Okay. So I think primetime warriors need to pay attention to voices of people like this as well. Let's move on to the next question here now. We have, I have a rapid fire round coming up for you as well. It's only fair that you
should be... What's in my hamper?
There's no hamper now. Come on.
Balkha, there's don't no be hamper. Like that.
All right. Let's move on here. Let's take questions from Kunal. Kunal?
So, in your recent article, you wrote about freedom of speech in respect to your AIB show. So there were some statements by you which were very offensive, like every adult in India who's a virgin calls himself religious. So
hang on, I've got your question. On the roast, you got into trouble.
Right.
I remember talking to you at that time and I said, Karan, I think it's ridiculous to come after you guys, but I didn't think it was necessarily very funny. Yeah. That was my position. Right. When you look back at it, what do you feel about that roast?
I don't know, because I felt that I didn't realize that it would kind of, you know, magnify the way it did. I discussed it. I stand by it. I've done it, and I don't entirely regret it. But there are things that I felt that I wish we had come together and kind of discussed it holistically before putting it out there. I didn't realize a lot of it was like in the moment,
yeah.
And a lot of it just so happened.
Yeah.
And would I go through that roast again? Maybe not.
Is it fear of repercussions? Is it? Oh, it's just not worth the headache? Or is it that looking back, maybe all of it was not. Look, no one has to be tasteful all the time. I know that there's a thing of...
You know, the thing is that...
It was like locker room humor,
think,
or toilet
I
humor
to say
put
that,
out in the public
I have
domain.
To say those AIB boys are bright.
They are very they're bright.
Super
and they're
bright.
Very bright.
They're bright.
But
they're
we don't
talent.
Have to find all their jokes funny.
Exactly. And they are talented, they're bright, and their idea
And I think
was
it was
amazing.
Ridiculous to go after them. Let me
exactly.
say that on record. Ridiculous.
And I enjoyed most of it.
Yeah.
There were certain parts of it that I would, if I had to do it again, if ever... if you ask me, it's not worth the headache, is the solution, that the option that I would take
yeah.
in your list of my reactions. Because
yeah.
like, who wants to deal with all this?
Yeah.
But I don't regret it, and I've done it, and I think those guys are bright. So yeah, would I do it again? No. But I don't regret doing what I did.
Okay,
there.
Let's take a last question and then we'll get into our last rapid fire round. Sahil, where is Sahil?
Sir, we have seen you get emotional in one of the reality shows where you hugged a 7-year-old child and said that you wanted to adopt one. But recently, Union Minister Sushma Swaraj made a statement saying the surrogacy has been a fashionable trend between celebrities. So do you think it's a better option for celebrities to adopt child rather than surrogate one?
I mean, I think that's a personal preference totally. But like, that's another point that I feel like I wish that there was nothing legal that could stop it. It's your personal
preference.
I think
it's
preference.
A ridiculous legislation and I don't think it'll actually pass.
I mean, and I hope not. It's your personal preference. I don't think there's any single individual that would treat it fashionably from where I come from. And even if I had to have a surrogate child, there's no technical way I can have one besides adopting the path of surrogacy, unless there's adoption, which is the second option.
Yeah.
And I'm a single man. And if I wanted to have a child, because I genuinely believe that I would be a strong parent and bringing a life into this world would mean the world to me. So in the given environment, I'm not so sure whether the bill will be passed or not. But I hope it doesn't, because I don't agree with it.
You want to be a parent?
I think I do. I don't know if I was ready for it. But I'm ready today. I would love to be a parent.
And you'd like to adopt or have one biologically through surrogacy?
I'm not yet sure about that, because I haven't slowed down in my life to take that decision.
How much is your impending movie Your Own Story?
It's a lot to do with me. And
so Ranbir Kapoor is essentially playing you?
Well, in a sense, it's a bit of fiction and fact. So I've been through
But the unrequited love
yeah,
bit
I've been
is,
through
is your life?
There is, well, in a couple of situations in my life. There are scenes in the film that I have felt and gone through. There are beats in the film that I have completely been like traumatized by. And there were scenes that were really tough to direct, because there were dialogues that I have either heard or have said. Edile Mushkil is I would say my most internal work. Here I felt it was deeply cathartic. And it's something that I shared with Ranbir only halfway through the film. And he was completely shocked, because when one of those nights where you feel like you feel you've done a great moment, or you're about to shoot one, and you feel very attached to the actor who's actually executing your emotion. And at that point of time, we had a drink and, you know, we were just chatting, and I told him about a phase of my life. And he was completely rattled, because the next day we were performing this breakdown scene of his. And I said, you know, I need you to understand that I've been through this. What we're going to do tomorrow is actually what I have been through. What you're going to say and how you react is what I've done and been through. And this is how it happened in my life. And I thought that was the only direction to give him, because there was nothing else, and he totally got it. And the way, and I have to say, and even if it sounds completely ridiculous, but the way he performed that is, I felt, was a mirror to my moment in my life.
So I have to end with what you made famous,
yes.
The rapid fire. But okay. I have to first ask you, do you leak the questions to?
Never.
Never? Is it absolutely candid?
Never.
Is it absolutely candid?
It's 98%. I've cheated on one actor once.
Which one?
It was Sanjay Dutt. He was with Sushmita Sen, and I knew that she would completely completely storm him with her answers, and he would be this vulnerable lost child. So they had come on my first season, Sanjay Dutt and Sushmita. It's the only time I have given an
leak
actor.
Leak the question.
I didn't leak it. I just gave it to him, and I gave him the answers. As well.
Okay. If Donald Trump becomes president of the United States.
No, yaar. I mean, don't even say if. That
if
no,
Donald
no,
Trump
no,
becomes
no,
president,
no.
Yard is not an answer.
No, I'll be very sad. I'll be sad, I'll upset, I'll break a few things in my house.
If Barack Obama invited you for dinner.
Happily.
If Narendra Modi invited you for chai.
I would love to. Absolutely love to. In fact, he's helped me at a very traumatic time in my life, and I have a deep amount of regard for him.
Can you share what that story is?
No.
What was the traumatic moment in your life? I think if you ask it a different way, maybe you'll get the answer. How did he help you? That would be interesting.
It was interesting because there was a problem during My Name Is Khan, and I really sought his help at that time as he was chief minister. And through a certain contact, you know, I got to speak with him, and he was amazingly proactive, and immediately he understood the enormity of a helpless filmmaker who had a film on release. And he was immensely supportive in one telephonic conversation. He understood the situation, made sure that there was no issue, and that's a moment I can never, never, ever forget.
And you would hope for the same understanding from the BJP as your impending film is facing a similar kind of controversy.
And he was amazingly supportive, and I know he and his entire party would understand what I went through then and what I hope I don't go through today.
Okay. What you mean and what you say, since you've written a column about this and what you're actually thinking. So what do you say, but what do you actually mean? Hello, yes, how lovely to hear from you.
Please, why have you called me? It's in the middle of the day.
Thank you for your feedback. I love that you feel you can be so honest with me.
Why? Who are you? What have you made last? And how dare you have an opinion?
No comment.
I have many things to say, but I fear what I fear.
I appreciate all the feedback I get on Twitter.
Lies. Praise me or I hate you.
I would love to work with you. Let your people talk to mine.
I don't think you're talented. Get the hell out of here. Leave the movies right now.
I have plans this evening. Otherwise, I would love to have caught up for dinner.
I'd rather go through Chinese torture than have dinner with you.
No, I'm not interested in going to Hollywood. Our own industry is so exciting.
No way. I want to wear that black suit and win a speech and say, this is Mansuyu, India.
An Oscar or Padma Shri, I'd be honored, but only when I deserve it.
Are you mad? Who gets what they deserve? Really?
An unfinished dream, more seriously.
We discussed it, to be a parent.
Well, may your dream come true. Thank you, Karan, for your candor, for your wit, for your humanism, and for actually taking a stand despite the fear and vulnerability that the industry feels. Let's have a big round of applause for our guest today on the panel.
Thank you, Vanka.